series of Tales of the Baal Shem Tov with the third installment of the story of the loan. You will recall that a certain Jew, Rav Zev, had lent an anonymous and incognito nobleman 500 ruble at the advice of the Baal Shem Tov. Later on, the Baal Shem Tov was approached by Rav Zev when there was a terrible blood libel against the members of the community in the whole area where Rav Zev lived. The Baal Shem Tov told Rav Zev to travel to Rome, which was extremely dangerous for a Jew, because Jews were not allowed there, and to have an audience with the Pope. Rav Zev, at the outskirts of Rome, was attacked by an unruly mob, and a count came and saved him from his attackers. It ended up that this count was the very same individual who Rav Zev had lent the money to. The count used his influence for Rav Zev to be able to gain an audience with the Pope and taught Rav Zev how to flatter the Pope. And Rav Zev had succeeded in at least getting the Pope to read a story before the Council and the College of Cardinals of previous historical incidents where there were blood libels and false accusations against Jews, and some situations the Jews were blameless and found to be blameless. They were always blameless, but some situations the evidence was overturned, while in other situations it was not overturned. Rav Zev had no other recourse but to agree to the Pope's plan, and the College of Cardinals agreed to the plan, and they said that if the story was found to be favorable, then they would change the ruling and the Jews would not have to be banished from their country. However, Rav Zev was in great trepidation because in the overwhelming and the preponderance of these stories, Nishtogedacht, unfortunately the fate of the Jews, we know, was none too good. But Rav Zev was hoping and trusting in Hashem that out of these many tomes of historical volumes of these trials of the Jewish people, they would come up with a story that proved that it was not where the testimony was disproved, and thus the ruling would be that in this case as well, the testimony was to be disproved. And so the Pope had ordered the volumes to be brought before him, and in the presence of the College of Cardinals, the Pope started to read the story on a page that was opened at random. And this is a story that the Pope read. There once lived near Rome two Jewish brothers who both were tailors by profession. The village where they lived in had a spa which was known far and wide for its healing waters, and so the aristocracy of Rome would come over there quite often to take to the baths. Since people were there on vacation and they had leisure time, they would try to get their clothing then as well, and the two tailors gained a very good reputation by their fine work, and they built up a large and devoted clientele of wealthy Romans, which year by year grew by word of mouth because they were known to make the finest of garments. Because they had to deliver the garments and they had to make additional fittings, they would have to travel often to Rome. As Jews were not allowed within the gates of Rome in the evening, even if they had special permission to enter, they could only go there during the day. These two tailors had to keep the curfew, and they had to leave the city gates by evening. And this was something which was difficult for them because the place where they lived was quite far, and it was a long and tedious journey every time they had to go to Rome for deliveries and for fittings. And so they went to their influential customers, and they said to them, you know that you like our wares, and we could serve you so much better that if we would obtain permits, a special license, a dispensation for us to live within the city, then you would have greater access to us, and your fine clothing would be much more readily available, and you could have more of it. And this was something which was found favor in the eyes of the Roman dandies who desired to have as much beautiful finery as possible. And so they pulled many bureaucratic strings, and finally the two young men, the Jewish tailors, the brothers, were permitted to open a workshop within the city limits. Their shop prospered, and they continually added satisfied customers to their clientele until they weren't able to take in any more customers because they had their hands totally full in doing their laborious and exacting work up to the specs that everybody expected of them and what they were used to doing. One of their customers, a particularly wealthy and influential nobleman, formed a strong attachment to these two brothers. This nobleman was quite a sickly individual, and as such, he kept away from most of the rowdy crowd, did not join them in their drinking parties and debauchery, and rather than pursue the pleasures of the idle rich or do business, which he did not have to do because he was fabulously wealthy, he would try to find people of culture with whom to speak to. And in these two Jewish tailors, who were not only expert tailors, but also very fine scholarly Jews, he found comfort in their companionship. And he would speak to them more and more often, and he began to take them into his confidence as time grew, as time marched on. Once, when the two brothers were visiting his palace to deliver a suit that this nobleman had ordered, the man invited them into his palace to inspect his treasures. He gave them a room-by-room tour of his magnificent palace. Finally, upon reaching the last room, which was hung with precious mirrors on each wall, the nobleman moved over to one of the walls and pressed a certain hidden secret panel, whereupon a section of the mirror opened up to reveal an underground chamber. In this vault, he explained to the tailors, I have hidden treasures of gold, silver, and precious gems, which even my wife does not know about. And he showed them his most precious treasures. The Jews were awed by this magnificent opulence and display of unheard of wealth. After giving them the tour, the two tailors left their friend and they went back to their shop. As time went on, this nobleman's health, which was never too good in the first place, became worse, and he took very ill and soon died, leaving only a wife to mourn him. Not being a Roman by birth, his wife decided to leave the city and return to her birthplace, which happened to be in England. But how was she to liquidate her assets in Rome? Recalling her husband's friendship with the tailors, she went to consult with them because she knew that these were honest and God-fearing individuals. The best way to sell a palace such as yours is to announce a public auction in all the European newspapers. That will attract people who can afford to buy such an expensive piece of real estate. It's not every day that such a palace comes on the market. The widow listened to the tailor's advice and announced a public sale where all could come and bid for the palace and the content. And she'd be content in getting the money and taking it and finding a country home in the outskirts of London. On their part, the tailors knew that there was that section which had been hidden by the landowner and which had contained wealth which wasn't the landowner's own but had come from generations of booty and plunder, much of it which had been taken from unfortunate Jewish people who had been mercilessly plundered in blood libels, such as the story where we are talking about, where Abzev is imploring for the benefit of the Jewish people who are about, God forbid, to lose all their wealth and possessions if they were to be banished for the country. And the tailors felt that it was rightfully theirs, or best, that they should take possession of this wealth in order that they be able to utilize this wealth to give it to Tzedakah, to distribute it to their unfortunate brethren throughout the world, all of whom would benefit mightily from such treasures which they would take care of to sell at appointed times so that they would not give rise to such magnificent tzedakah. And so the tailors intended to participate in this auction, knowing that any price they paid for the castle would be well worth it, since its secret treasures were unknown to anybody but themselves. The day of the auction arrived, and the cream of European aristocracy came to participate to buy this magnificent palace. The aristocrats did not mind vying with each other for the purpose of this palace, because that's what the excitement of an auction is all about. But what did bother them and cause them to grit their teeth was the chutzpah of the two Jewish tailors who should not be Jews, who should not be living in Rome altogether, and who had grown fat on Roman purses, and they were also vying to buy this palace. And so they decided among themselves that come what may, they would see to it to outbid the tailors. The tailors, however, who had their mind on the vast wealth which they could give to Tzedakah, were not to be outbid. They kept in mind the vast fortune secretly hidden in the late owner's secret vault behind the mirror, and they bid such a high price that nobody could, in the end, match their bid. And so they succeeded in purchasing the palace and transferring it to their names. As soon as they did so, they embarked on two things. The first was to give away the gold and silver and precious gems as quickly as they could, to disperse it as secretly as they could for tzedakah. The second thing was that they were well aware of the hatred of their Roman neighbors. And one of the first things they therefore did was to remove one of the rare diamonds in the vault and present it to the Pope at that time as a present. And with smooth phrases of flattery, they begged for the Pope's protection. And they said, as a symbol of our thankfulness to you, we would like to present you with this gem. The Pope was known for his love of the opulent, and especially for precious gems. And seeing the fantastic gem before him, and hearing their praises, the Pope responded by saying, "Your generosity simply overwhelms me. I have long longed for such a gem. I have a certain statue which I would like to adorn with two stones, which these stones would serve as a perfect finishing touch. I have never seen the likes of this diamond, and I doubt that I could find its match anywhere in the entire European continent. What a pity, for two such stones would have made the most perfect eyes for a most beautiful statue. I would willingly pay a fortune for a gem which was like this, so that I could fill that statue with these two gems. The brothers thought for a moment, and then one said, "Sir, we have a wealthy brother in Africa who deals in gems. We will write to him and impress upon him the importance of matching this diamond. I am sure that he will do his utmost to see to it that you gain a match. And as for the cost, let that be an additional gift of ours to you," for the brothers understood that the Pope was hoping to get this without having to pay for the second one, just as he didn't have to pay for the first one, by giving them the right to stay in the city and that nobody should persecute them. The brothers continued to prosper, and in equal proportion, however, did the hatred of their anti-Semitic enemies grow to them, for they were jealous of this magnificent palace that these two Jews owned, little knowing that the purpose that the Jews bought the palace for was not for their self-grandeur, but rather to be able to give of the hidden wealth for tzedakah, although this might cost them dearly, as it did, for the people kept on hating them more and more. False stories and slander was continually rumored around, and everything was done to bring them into disfavor with the authorities. When the pressure grew to the breaking point, the brothers removed another magnificent gem from their secret treasure store and brought it to the Pope. The Pope could not help showing his pleasure, but he had to do it carefully, in private, so as not to let the enemies of the brothers suspect that he did, in fact, favor them. While this was going on, the anti-Semites were not resting. Feverishly, they tried to come up with one plan after another how they could get rid of these two fine, God-fearing, and upstanding Jewish tailors, ridding them from their midst, and being able to gain the palace, as was done so many other times when they would institute blood libels. Finally, at one such meeting, a horrible plan was hatched by the tailor's enemies. What did they do? They removed a fresh corpse from a grave and had it thrown in the palace cellar of the brothers, a place where they seldom ventured, as the catacombs in the cellar was not a favorite place, as it was dank and damp and dark. And having planted this false evidence in the cellar, they began spreading the news that a man had been murdered. And after the rumor spread that a person had been murdered, the people, the anti-Semitic elements within the Roman community, produced witnesses who swore that they had seen the two brothers, the Jews, commit the murder, and that they had hid the corpse in their cellar. Ludicrous as these charges were, and knowing full well that these charges were groundless, nevertheless, this aroused the ire of the hordes, and they began gathering outside of the palace, where quickly police came and with a warrant entered the cellar And sure enough, of course, they found the corpse that was previously hidden in the cellar. And these two poor Jews were dragged off to jail. Try as they could, the Jews could not free themselves from this horrible situation. And the trial was dragged out for a half a year. And although the best lawyers were employed, nevertheless, since from the beginning this was a false libel against them, and the testimony was unshakable, the verdict was finally announced, death by hanging. And it was proclaimed that in 2 days hence, they were to be hung with great celebration, as was then the custom, in the public square, where everyone would see how these cursed Jews had taken the life of a Christian and how they were going to meet their just deserts. The two brothers now had only 2 days to live. Of course, they spent their precious last 2 days davening to Hashem, saying Tilim, crying to Hashem, and imploring His mercy, and mentioning the fact that the only reason why they had bought the palace, which had aroused so much ire from their anti-Semitic neighbors, was for the sake of giving tzedakah and for no other reasons. With 2 nights left to live, after saying their tefillos, the brothers fell into a very exhausted sleep. One brother had a very, very strange dream. In the dream, an old bearded man came to him and comforted him and said the following. He said, "Don't fear. Continue to trust in Hashem, for He has heard your tefillos. God has heard your prayers, and you will see that you and you will be brother and your brother will surely be saved from the unjust death that awaits you." The man woke up and remembered the dream. But what was this? Was this just a dream of hope? Was this a dream of reality? Was the dream a forerunner of their being saved at the last moment from the hangman's noose? And what about the end of the story? How does it end up? And how will this impact on Rav Zev, who is now standing before the council and the Pope, listening to this story, together with all the cardinals and the Pope as he is reading that story, and the fate of the entire community rests upon the outcome of this story, now that he has succeeded in the Baal Shem Tov's mission of appearing before the Pope, and their lives of the Jews hangs in the thread, what will become? This we will find out in Yirtzeh Hashem next week in the last and final and fourth installment of this tale, The Loan.